Excuse me. Good morning. This is a meeting of the House Committee on Regional Affairs Committee. Today is Tuesday, March 30th. The time is 8:02 a.m. Members present are Representative Drummond, Representative McCarty, Representative McCabe, Representative Schrage, myself, Representative Hannon, and excused absent is Representative Patkatuk. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, let me remind everyone to silence their cell phones, and I'd like to ask those participating remotely to please keep their microphones muted when they are not actively speaking so that we can have a clear recording of the proceedings. Our recording secretary is Lori Rowland, and Kelsey Ricker is our LIO moderator assisting with teleconferencing support. Thank you both. Representative Prox has joined us. My staff is Stephanie Andrews. She's in the back of the room. She's the committee aide. And if you have any notes or deliveries or things, have them delivered to Stephanie and she'll share them. Today we are going to have our first hearing of House Bill 22, Shared Animal and Raw Milk Products. We'll be hearing a presentation from the bill's sponsor, Representative Tarr, and her staff, Thatcher Brower, and then taking invited and public testimony today. Before we start with public and invited testimony, we'll invite Representative Tarr up to the table and have her give us an overview of her bill. Representative Tarr.
It's like a kid's seat here, but that's okay. I'll make it work. Good morning to members of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I'm Representative Garen Tarr. I represent District 19 in Anchorage. And thank you so much for the opportunity to present House Bill 22 to you this morning. I'm most excited about the invited testimony that you're going to get to hear from this morning, some of the strong leaders we have in the agriculture community in Alaska, from the Alaska Farmland Trust, Alaska Farm Bureau, and then from Susie Crosby, one of our great farmers. So I'm just going to do the brief introduction. We have a few different PowerPoints this morning. We know a couple of you have heard this bill before because it was in the legislature the last time, but several of you are new, and what's happening in agriculture in Alaska is a good news story and something we can be excited about. So I hope this morning for the new folks, this will provide context for why we're working on this bill and maybe even inspire you to consider other policy measures we could work on to improve food security and grow our agriculture industry. So this morning, I hope we'll have an enjoyable presentation, and I guess, as they like to say on the airlines, just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. So let's get started. Food security in Alaska, a lot of us talk about this, and if you haven't heard these numbers before, 95% of our food is imported from outside of Alaska. That's billions of dollars of spending that is happening, and it's not happening in to support products produced or grown in Alaska or businesses that reside in Alaska. But we know that farmers will produce more. A survey done by the Division of Agriculture found that 67% of farmers surveyed would produce more if they had more market options. And you'll hear about the $5 challenge from our other speakers this morning. And if we look back to statehood, some folks might be familiar with the Mat-Su farm developments and that history. But just in a comparison, 525 farms back then, and we were producing about 49% of our agricultural products. And what was really fun to learn about when I started working on this bill was that we have a strong history of dairy farming. And here, dairy farming goes back to at least 1867. That's the earliest reference I think I found. But if people are familiar out by the airport here in Juneau, right, where it's, I think it's called Old Dairy Lane or something, that, you know, that was an area where there were dairy farms. People have told me stories, you know, all across the state of these small dairy operations. So we do have a strong history there. But today, only two certified dairy farms in Alaska. And what's changed is, you may be familiar, this isn't just true of dairy operations, but farming in general are very capital intensive startup. And what we're trying to do with this bill, and I think you'll see, is produce that ability for someone to start small and then upscale and then upscale and then, if they so choose, become a full grade A dairy. So the herd share program that is addressed in this legislation is allowed by regulation, and the code is listed there, and it requires a contractual relationship. So here's the language. What happens through a herd share program is each individual who participates becomes an owner of one of the animals, and then what you do by becoming an owner of the animal is have access to the fluid milk product. So House Bill 22 would do two things. One is put the herd share program into statute. So it's in regulation now. By putting it in statute, that strengthens it and gives it more of a feeling of permanency. And for the farmers who want to make the investments, that's an important component to know that they're investing in something that can be long-term. And then it also allows producers to offer value-added products. And this is something we've heard repeatedly as a request. This idea, in fact, came from farmers at and consumers at the Alaska Farm Bureau meeting in asking them, you know, what is something we could work on in the legislature that would help grow this industry? So right now, a farmer is only allowed to share the fluid milk product. Of course, some people are not interested in that product, but would be very interested in ice cream or butter or yogurt or cheese. And then there's also the sort of timing component of it, so that over a year's time, sometimes your animals are producing more than you have customers for. This would allow them to take that extra fluid milk and have another product that they could make with it, all still through a herd share program. So that herd share program, you'll hear from Susie, and it's in your packet, one of the contractual agreements that someone has to sign. So we talk about this in the context of informed consumer choice. The consumer knows what they're participating in, and they are involved in this contractual relationship. And we'll hear from Susie a little bit more about what that looks like from the farmer to herd share participant relationship. And then again with our other presenters about just the big picture of what's happening in agriculture and how this bill can play a role. Thank you.
Representative Tarr, I have one question for you. We'll see if members have any other have questions before we go to your presenters. Does anybody? You used the term grade A dairy. Please tell us what that is and what it entails.
Thank you, Chair Hannon. The grade A dairy USDA designation, and I think hopefully other folks can add to this when they present, so I'm just want to put that out there, but that USDA certification is required for sale of milk products in retail outlets, for example, and required to have the USDA grade A label. So the herd share operations, you know, are going to be your smaller operations, and the herd share participants, a smaller group of people, you know, transitioning to the large scale grade A dairy is much more expensive, but it's, you know, what some hope to upscale to. And so, you know, this is giving hopefully the opportunity to start small and then build your customer base and be able to move into that. But it's a little bit different. It's more, you know, the Havemeister dairy, if you want to have a product in a bottle, sell it in a market, you know, you want to move in that direction. The herd share program is definitely geared towards more of the smaller scale operations.
And I'm going to have one follow-up, which is, I believe 2 years ago when we heard this, there was only one grade A dairy in Alaska, and that was Havemeister. And I see that Baptist Mission Farm in Kodiak is now grade A. So is that just the two of them, or do we have any other additional grade A dairies in the last 2 years?
Thank you, Chair Hannon. To my knowledge, those two are the only that are operational at this time. I am aware of a couple others that are trying to scale up and become operational.
Great. Representative Shoggy.
Yeah, thank you. So I was curious, to what extent are we seeing these herd share programs in practice? I mean, do you have any information on how many people participate in these programs? I'm just curious.
Through the chair to Representative Shoggy, we don't have an exact number. We do know there are dozens and dozens of herd share operations, and we know that's thousands of customers and herd share participants, more accurately, statewide. And That is more, and Susie, I hope, will speak to this a little bit, you know, through the community of people who are farmers and know and talk to each other, through what I've learned through the Alaska Farm Bureau. We know that they're happening, and we have them in Delta, in the Fairbanks area, in the Mat-Su, I believe in Homer. So we know there are quite a number of operations. And if you look in your letters of support, you'll see just dozens of letters of support have come in from all over the state. And that's because, you know, many of those people are participants and very supportive of what they're able to, you know, receive in that Alaska-grown product.
Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Annan. So I'm curious, maybe you could talk a little bit about safety and when we went to the whole pasteurization thing that has driven us to this point of herd share instead of just selling milk, instead of the farmers just selling milk. Maybe a little bit of history on the record would be good. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And through the chair to Representative McCabe, it's an interesting story because what used to happen is people lived close to the farm, and there wasn't a distribution problem. So the milk was produced on the farm, and people lived nearby, and they were able to access it in relatively short order. But over time, particularly around the early 1900s, when, you know, farming became more of a rural activity, and then people started to move into more urban areas, what ended up happening pre-refrigeration is the transport distance between the farm and the consumer became greater. And you ended up, because it was pre-refrigeration, you ended up having these transport issues where, you know, it did become an unsafe product because of the way it was transported and the distance. In response to that, then, you know, we created laws around pasteurization and homogenization of our milk products. And so now that's the standard, but it's not because it can't be done safely. And you'll hear and see from Susie, you know, these herd share operations, people have named their animals. They are more like a pet than, right, than, you know, just a, right, an animal that they're sort of not close to, if you will. I mean, they're really involved in the health of the animals. Barry would, you know, very much notice if anything was wrong. And what you'll see is, you know, these operations are operating safely, and very infrequent, if ever, have there been issues. And I guess what we've been talking a little bit about is just thinking about, you know, sort of the context of that more broadly in food safety. We know that, you know, there are incidents that happen, but in the issue with the issue of raw milk, it's very, very infrequent that it has happened.
Thank you.
Other members of the committee? All right. Well, we do have some invited testimony. You've referred to Susie, so I guess she'll be first on deck.
Yep.
So Susie Crosby is online with Cottonwood Creek Farms. If we could get Susie unmuted. We'll start with...
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Susie Crosby with Cottonwood Creek Farm. And thank you, Representative Tarr, for the invite today. So I'm just going to walk you through a little bit, for those of you that are not familiar with herd share, just walk you through a little bit here. Thatcher, you can go ahead and hit the next slide. So for starters, we're a goat dairy. And why goats? They're small animals. They're about the size of humans, you know, 150 to 200, and easy to handle. For a lot of people, the digestibility of goat milk gives them an opportunity to have dairy products that otherwise they would not be able to drink. A lot of people are allergic to cow milk. Not a lot of infrastructure needed. You know, my husband built that milk stand, and you know, it's a lot easier to handle small animals than large. Cleanup is simple, and as Reptar pointed out, I've heard it often said that goats are the missing link between pets and livestock. They all have their personalities, but they definitely still are producers. And then next slide. So why herd share? Your goats can help pay their way, pay for their food, and connect consumers with producers. It's a wonderful way to establish those relationships. You'll hear a lot of people refer to themselves as locavores. In other words, they want to eat locally produced food. They want a shorter food chain, less people handling their food. And a big one is freedom of choice. And you know, people definitely need the opportunity. People have been given now the freedom of choice to basically smoke, drink, or eat practically anything that is available. But raw milk is still very heavily regulated, so that freedom of choice is a big one. And then food security, especially here in Alaska, we really had a big lesson, big eye-opener in food security last March. Next slide. Do you guys remember what those shelves looked like? I went out one morning. It was in mid-March. I had to grab something at Three Bears, and this is what the grocery store looked like. And then, next slide, came back to our farm, and that was what my fridge looked like. And none of our herd share people ever missed a drop of milk during that pandemic time of shortage. So what herd share is, it's legal in Alaska by under regulation. This HB 22 seeks to put it from regulation into statute just to protect it for the future. Currently, it is restricted to fluid milk only, which is something that HB 22 seeks to expand. It's sustainable. CSA, community-supported agriculture, it's a wonderful way for small farmers to be able to continue to contribute to local food security. It's not just a willy-nilly, hey, I'm going to go to the farm and go buy some milk today. It's a scheduled pickup with a commitment and a monthly fee, which basically is what's called the herd share maintenance fee. And what it does is pays for a share of the care and feeding of your animals, and it then offers the herd share member a share of the milk that those animals produce. And it's extremely important to know your farmer. We invite anybody who signs up for herd share, we invite them. In fact, we encourage them to come and check us out, look at our operation, and make sure that they're comfortable with how we do things. Next slide. What herd share is not, it's not the grocery store. You can go to the grocery store on a Tuesday and buy 5 gallons of milk and then not go again until the following Friday and then buy 1 gallon. So we're not the grocery store. We're not selling milk. It's that scheduled weekly commitment to people who we have contact info for who have signed up as members of our program. It's not making cheese or other products yet, but House Bill 22, again, would allow those value-added products within the definition of still keeping that herd share relationship. HB 22 would not give you license to run out to the farmer's market, set up a stand, and start handing out goat cheese. It would still keep it within that mutual contact relationship of established trust. Next slide. So a little bit about how the milk gets from the goat into the fridge. Part one, milking location. People say, oh yeah, milking, you know, we milk out in our barn. It's like, oh no, the barn is where the animals live. They poop there, they pee there, they make messes there. How about let's take those animals out of the barn and into a clean location for milking. I think that's critical. Even pre-pandemic, wash your hands was always one of my big ones. Wash hands between every goat, wash hands between touching goats and touching food. In our milking protocols, we use a pre-milking spray with an antibacterial, and then we do milk by machine, but final strip is by hand. And then there's a post-milking dip that sanitizes the udder and keeps it from bacterial infection. Next slide. So part two, this is the other end of that milk line, from the goat into the canister. That sharp dividing line, whenever I train a new helper, I always say one of my mottos, draw a sharp dividing line between poop and food. You don't put something on the milk stand and then put it on the counter. Wash hands in between touching goats and touching jars. That milk then gets filtered just as an added precaution. Those jars had just come from the freezer, and so they're rapidly chilling. And then next slide. They go into cold storage in those ice buckets in the bottom of the fridge, and from there they are put up onto the shelf of the fridge, and then from there they go out to the customers, the herd share members. Record keeping, you'll notice some numbers on some of those jars. We write down every goat's milk, her number is written on that jar, every pair, and that way if anybody ever has a complaint, we can go, okay, on that day you got milk from this particular pair of goats, and we can narrow it right down and check them out. And then part of it is educating the share owners about keeping the milk cold and handling it well. Jar care, we run every jar back through our dishwasher after they come back before those jars are filled again. Next slide. So HB 22 would allow for that value-added products. Here's a few of them. queso fresco, that was one I made. Next slide. Feta, that one was with sun-dried tomatoes and some Italian herbs. Next slide. Chev, you can make, Chev is like a cream cheese. It's what's commonly referred to as goat cheese, and it'll take any flavor you want to throw at it, up to and including chocolate for truffles. It would make any of those and or yogurt, kefir, ice cream, other things, to be a legal component of a herd share agreement. Next slide. So the benefits of House Bill 22 for consumers. Again, freedom to make those food choices without restriction. Raw milk currently is probably the most restricted substance in our state and our country, even now that, you know, even marijuana has been legalized in a lot of states. It's funny that raw milk is still so restricted. It would give people a variety of dairy options besides milk. I know a lot of people are not big milk drinkers, but certainly love to have some yogurt or some cheese. Again, it allows access to digestible products for those who are intolerant to commercial dairy. I would say fully 50% of our herd share members are with us because it gives them milk that they can drink because they can't digest milk from the store. And so many people really prefer to have it just ready-made versus trying to learn how to do it themselves. And there's that growing preference for unique, locally made artisan food, and people do love that shorter food chain, the fewer people handling their product, the better. Next slide. The benefits of HB 22 for producers. As Reptar referenced, there's usually quite a milking lactation curve. It's high in the summer, lower in the winter, so it would allow for that great usage for seasonal surplus. And the farmer can buy more hay per gallon of milk because goats do eat even during the dry period when they're dried off between lactations. And specialty products would still be available in winter, even when there's a drop in fluid milk production. Next slide. And benefits overall. It would help to strengthen Alaska's fragile food system. Again, our herd share members never went short a drop of milk during that pandemic. It would help prevent food waste. We've rarely been in the situation of actually having to discard milk, but once or twice it's happened. It would expand Alaskan agriculture by offering a new opportunity for farmers. Next slide. So, from the goats at Cottonwood Creek Farm, please free the cheese. Next slide. Thank you, everyone, for considering HB 22.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Susie. And if Chair Hannon will indulge me, I have a ton of questions, and I'm not averse to this at all. In fact, I'm a huge fan of anything that helps our farmers move past the excessive regulations. So this is quite the operation you just showed us. How long have you been doing it?
Since we got our first goats in 2000 and our first herd share customer in 2003. She was with us for 13 years, and finally her kids were growing up and they were traveling, and then some of her kids became herd share customers. So, yeah, but we've been doing it for 17, going on 18 years.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
That's awesome. I'm curious, in that 17 or 18 years, have there been any illnesses traced back to your farm or to your goats?
There have not.
So,
we have never had anyone say that they felt that they'd gotten sick from our milk.
Okay, so one more follow-up. I'm a supporter of herd share, but I'm a bigger supporter of completely doing away with the regulation, which is sort of bypassing a sales regulation. So I'm curious, if we were to completely get rid of the restriction on having to sell pasteurized milk in the state, if the legislature were to do that at some point, would it harm your business or would it expand your business?
You know, that's a question that probably would entail several other questions. First of all, I would wonder whether there would be a ton of restrictions placed on raw milk sales. I did read a draft regulation in which it placed a number of restrictions. There was some testing, inspections, requirement of posting vaccination results or records on walls for customers. And if that's the same set of regulations you're discussing, I don't think it would help herd share at all. One of the things that sets herd share apart, goats produce pretty much the same amount of milk every day. You're going to milk those, you know, 12, 15, 16 goats, and you're going to get that same 12, 13, 14 gallons of milk. I would probably still want to stick with herd share because, our people come, our Tuesday people come on a Tuesday, our Thursday people come on a Thursday, and they pick up their scheduled amount of milk. So I don't really want to turn into the grocery store where somebody could come in and say, I need 5 gallons, and then the next week it's like, are you coming? Oh, no, I don't need any milk this week. So for those two reasons, one, the constancy and consistency of herd share is helpful to us, and I would really want to look over what regulations would be placed on outright sales of raw milk before I would make an opinion.
Final follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, so I think that maybe you and I should talk offline.
And happy to do that.
And I'd be, in preparation for this, I read through the New Hampshire regulation on selling raw milk, and it's something that I am very interested in. So I'd like to discuss that with you a little bit further, probably offline.
I would love to discuss that and also look at the regs in Maine. I'm saying this off the cuff, but I believe it's Maine, Utah, North Dakota, and one other state that now, and Wyoming, that have food freedom laws where the restrictions were lifted. And interestingly, there have been no surges in illness in those states since raw milk was allowed.
Awesome.
So, yes, I would love to do that at your convenience.
Yeah, thank you so much, and great presentation. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Okay, seeing no other questions, and I will just let you, the committee know, we do have the state veterinarian and ADEC online available to answer questions. So if we get back after our scheduled presenters, if you have details about agency and safety, they are online for their expertise. Our next invited testimony is Amy Seitz. And Amy is online. Let me find. Amy is with the Alaska Farm Bureau. And they're loading your presentation right now. And Amy is teaming in with us and is available on screen.
Good morning. I'm getting a little.
Try that again, Amy.
Is this better?
There's a little bit of an echo, but let's go ahead and get started and see how bad it is.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing House Bill 22 today. For the record, my name is Amy Seitz. I am the Executive Director for the Alaska Farm Bureau and happy to be here this morning. Just a little bit about who the Farm Bureau is. We are the largest advocacy organization for agriculture in the state as well as nationally. And our mission is to improve the economic well-being and expansion of agriculture and to enrich the quality of life for all Alaskans. One important thing that I like to point out about the Farm Bureau is the grassroots nature of the organization. That means our members who are farmers and ranchers and agriculture supporters set our policies and priorities. And I believe Representative Tarr mentioned before that our members have voted on this issue multiple years in a row that this is a priority for Alaskans, for our farmers and ranchers. And if we go on to the next slide. So I have two graphics here, and you will see them later, so I'm just going to talk briefly on them, and I think they're really important to this discussion as we look at agriculture and where we've come from, where we're going. We have some great news. The 2017 Ag Census showed that Alaska agriculture is growing. We saw a 30% increase in the number of farms, which ranked us number one in the nation. Which is awesome for Alaska. And then the value of products sold direct to consumer more than doubled between 2012 and 2017. And, you know, this, again, this is great for Alaska, for our food security, for our economy, to significantly increase our food security and diversify our economy. We still need more. We need more farms. We need more production. We need more opportunities to have value-added products. The challenges Alaska farmers face, we have a lack of infrastructure. We have shipping costs. We have trouble getting equipment and supplies and livestock up here a lot of the times. So it's important to have policies in place that can foster the growth and expand access to local food options. And House Bill 22 is one way we do this. And if we go to the next slide. So with the awesome growth we've been seeing and experiencing, and I know Representative Tarr said some of these numbers earlier also, we still have so much opportunity and need for growth. I think it was brought up that we used to produce almost 50% of the food in the state. Now it's around 5%. When there's a delay in shipping, and we've seen it multiple times, dock worker strikes down in the western states, earthquakes, you know, there's a lot of things that interrupt the food coming up to Alaska. And, you know, it doesn't take long to see empty store shelves. Also, the only producing 5% also means that almost $2 billion leaves our state. This is the amount of money Alaskans spend to purchase food annually, and most of that leaves the state. So taking steps like we have with House Bill 22 helps move the needle closer to the 50% mark. You know, it'd be great to get back to that one of these days. And I want to go on to the next slide and just touch on some economic impacts. Just a brief, you know, you might see these numbers regularly when we talk about agriculture, but it doesn't take much investment to have a really significant economic impact. If every resident in Alaska spent $5 a week on Alaska grown, it would be $188 million impact. And that's, you know, the $5 Alaska grown challenge. Hopefully everyone's seen that before. But that's just, you know, it's a carton of eggs, a gallon of milk, you know, hopefully some cheese shares one of these days. But it has a huge impact on our economy and improving our food security. And if we move on to the next slide. So I'm sure everyone's all aware that 2020 was kind of crazy. And I threw some quotes up that, you know, there were a lot of other quotes, you know, news articles and things going around, but I just picked a few quotes around the food system and, the impacts of COVID. Our food supply chain really had some issues. You know, farmers were still producing, but, we saw some highlighted bottlenecks in the food system, the supply chain. And a lot of the systems and policies that are in place didn't make it easy for transitioning. Whether it's transitioning the type of production that was happening or processing that was happening, packaging to get it to the stores, or the, you know, policies that, you know, certain things had to be met. It didn't make for an easy transition to the new world we faced in early COVID. And here in Alaska, as, you know, Susie's picture showed, our grocery store shelves were empty. Meat, dairy, produce, there were a lot of empty shelves in food departments. And we're still seeing some of those impacts. There's not always readily available products, and we're seeing prices rising. And if you think about how great would it have been if 4 or 5 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago, we had a heads up that something like this was going to happen. And more people started buying local then. If we had consistent markets so farmers could expand. If our needed infrastructure was in place, so we had better processing, better storage. And if policies were in place that allowed expansion in production, allowed the value-added products, you know, like House Bill 22. You know, Alaska would have been in a much better place when 2020 hit, when we saw lack of products. We could have produced more food or had more food available. We would have already been there. And I know our Alaska farmers did what they could. We just didn't have enough at that time. So we need good policies. We need support. So we're better prepared and we're more self-reliant if something like this happens again, or just in general, it's better for the state. And I'll move on to the next slide. So kind of getting a little more focused on dairy. I think there was a question about how many herd shares there are in the state. And I don't have exact numbers of herd shares, but I do in the 2017 Ag Census. There were 27 farms with milk cows, 39 farms with milk goats. And since we have two grade A certified dairies, which there are some more working through the process, one would kind of assume that most of those 27 cow farms and 39 goat farms are probably doing a herd share program. But I included this chart in here looking at what Alaska needs for a 90-day supply of food products. And we have milk. It doesn't go into cheese or any of the value-added products. But for 90 days in Alaska, we need 28 million pounds of milk to be able to provide for all the residents. And we make about 3.3 million pounds produced. And I think this is grade A certified numbers. So we definitely have a ways to go, and any opportunity to increase this production, and again, increase the access to cheese or butter or yogurt, it'll help get us more self-reliant. It'll encourage growth and it'll provide options for consumers, for herd share owners. And next slide. So House Bill 22 provides a lot of the options that we've been talking about. It encourages growth in the dairy industry. Whether it helps the dairy farmers expand to a point where they want to go grade A certified, that's great. Or if it just makes more successes at the herd share level, that's great too. It gets more food, more money in the local economies. It increases our food security. So I think any way we can promote more local production is going to help Alaska. And the herd share program is truly a know your farmer, know your food system. People get to choose that they want that product. It's not being forced on them. It's an option. It's allowing it. And this would, as Susie mentioned in her presentation, there are slow times in the liquid milk. Goats and cows sometimes need a break, or they don't produce as much at certain times of the year. So this would allow the herd manager an option for having products available during the slow time of liquid milk production. It would also allow those who maybe don't drink as much liquid milk but still want the cheese and yogurts and other stuff, it would go give those folks an option. So, and again, I wanted to just highlight again the economic impacts. This would have $5 a week, would have a $188 million impact. And with that, let me go to the last slide. It just has my contact information. I would be happy to answer any questions. And again, thank you for hearing House Bill 22. I think this is a great opportunity to expand the dairy sector in Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Seitz. We do have some questions from members of the committee, and the first is Representative McCarty.
Through the chair, thank you very much for your presentation. How, for cows or goats, and how many acres, how much food is needed to feed the animals, and what is our situation with that and being able to supply the food for the animals?
Through the chair, I can't give you exact numbers. I do know that anytime we increase livestock, it does give the opportunity for our animal feed producers to increase theirs. We do have hay growers up in Delta. We have producers growing oats and barley, even field peas that get fed to our livestock. So any expansion in the number of livestock, we do have land available to increase production. And I know the Delta farmers have been talking about expanding animal feed.
Your follow-up?
Go ahead.
I'm hearing that we have land in Alaska that maybe they're getting federal funding to not produce on the land, just to let it sit dormant. Is that something of concern to this project?
Through the chair, yeah, there are conservation reserve programs, and I guess one way to look at it, obviously we'd like to see land in production, but we also want to make sure land is protected and not developed. So, you know, whether it's the discussion of capturing carbon or saving land for the future options of farming, I think until someone is ready to start production, conserving it is a good option.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, actually, it does not. what I'm hearing is that for cattle, for instance, I know we're talking about milk cows, and I'm a little bit familiar with that. I have a family that had milking industry. My father delivered milk when I was a little boy. So he was the guy that delivered to houses. But the point is that I'm hearing that so many acres per cow, so many what per goat, and so much is needed. And if we're not being able to produce the food for the animals, then we aren't able to expand this type of program grown in Alaska or Alaska grown. So, you know, is there something that's an additional problem or challenge that exists in Alaska, because we have properties that, as I understand, that you can't go back to nature. It has to actually sit there dormant as being able to be used for hay or whatever, maybe barley, whatever. But there's federal money that just goes and pays a farmer of land to sit on this land. And I'm wondering if that's something of concern you're seeing.
Through the chair, I think more of a concern that I hear about is that there, you know, Alaska, you know, the good farmland is either trying to be developed into housing or it's uncleared raw land, and it's the cost to clear the land that is a challenge.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm going to go to Representative McCabe next. But we do have 8 farmers already signed up who are going to testify. And perhaps if they're listening, we could ask them each to address the availability to them currently of locally produced feed for their animals and what they think the potential is. So instead of the Farm Bureau, maybe those individual farmers could address where they're getting their feed from and the potential they think they would have to Alaskan produced feed for their animals. So if you're listening, the 8 farmers who are signed up, if you could get prepared for that one. Representative McCabe, you were next.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So as the local, Amy, as the advocacy group or the group for the farmers and the Farm Bureau, you would be pretty well aware if there was any illnesses associated with herd chairs, I would guess, right?
And I'm not aware of, I think it's 2010 or 2011 there was one, and I'm not aware of others since then.
Okay, thanks. I'm just I'm trying to establish the fact, I think, through some questions that herd share or unpasteurized milk is just as safe, or even in my reading, safer than pasteurized milk. You know where it comes from. If there is a problem, you know exactly which farm to go through instead of destroying millions of gallons of milk because it all filtered through, such as the salmonella outbreak in 1980-something or other. So I'm a fan, and you did a great job. Thanks.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Amy. Thank you very much for your presentation. Wasn't there a significant number of acreage opened up west of Nenana by the construction of a bridge? And I'm sorry, the name of the project escapes me, but we talked about it in resources at this very table several years ago, and I believe it's come to fruition. And I don't know. Anyway, if you know about it, could you talk about it, please? She's frozen.
I was going to say, Amy, you appear to have been frozen in time. Don't know if you can still hear us. If you want to turn off the video and just go to audio. There you are. You're back.
Madam Chair, I don't know if there's a question. My computer got garbled and I did.
Representative Drummond has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Amy. I asked about the land, the farmland west of Nenana that's been opened up by the construction of a bridge across a body of water that was preventing access. Do you know about that project?
To the Chair, Representative Drummond, yes. And there's a lot of excitement to see how that's going to come to fruition. There will be, it is raw land, so yeah, cost and input to clear that, you know, it'll take some, but it is an exciting thing for the future of agriculture. A lot of opportunities there.
Thank you. Follow up? I also was part of a trip to the Delta area, where the farmers in Delta had not seen a legislative tour since like 1984, and they were thrilled to have us there. And there's a great deal of production, not only of grains but of animals and I'm sure milk and eggs as well. But what I thought was interesting was they have only one option for shipping out of the Delta area, and that's the highway system. And there was an extension to the rail planned to Fort Greeley several years ago, big bridge built to get it over the Tanana Flats, and nothing happened. But I can only imagine that rail to the Delta Greeley area would help those farmers be able to deliver their product much more easily. Do you have any thoughts on the transportation part?
Yeah, the transportation is an issue that comes up regularly. Right now, our farmers, whether it's animal feed, value-added, livestock themselves, our farmers generally transport everything themselves. The rail, you know, would have been another option to get stuff in and out of Delta. Whether it's hauling livestock, hauling grain down to South Central or up to Fairbanks. The transportation system is definitely an area that could make these more efficient for farmers.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Ms. Seitz, thank you so much for your time this morning.
And thank you.
Our next presenter is also Amy Pettit.
The Amy's of Agriculture.
and she's with the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Perfect. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Unfortunately, I'm getting an error that my video doesn't want to turn on, but that's okay. That'll keep us from having connectivity issues. Appreciate the time this morning. Thanks to Representative Tarr for bringing this bill forward. I couldn't be more excited to be part of the invited testimony this morning. I'm going to start with a little bit of interaction, and you guys can't see me, but I can see you. And this is a test, and I would love you to play along. Raise your hand if you ate today. I'm seeing a few hands go up. Okay, awesome. Raise your hand again if anything you ate today was produced locally. No hands. Oh, maybe. Okay, good. We'll hear about that later, maybe. And final question for now. Raise your hand if you would prefer to have eaten something local this morning. Perfect. I say we pass this bill forward right now then, because that's what we're doing this morning. HB 22 is all about access to local food. And I'm hopeful that after hearing the testimony this morning and learning more about this bill, that you will agree with me that access to local food is important, and you're going to do anything that you can to help us move access forward. Next slide, please, Thatcher. My name is Amy Pettit, and I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Farmland Trust. We are a 501c3 based in Palmer with three primary goals to our mission. Next slide. We're here to protect, to promote, and to educate. So we permanently protect Alaska's valuable agricultural lands through the use of conservation easements, not what Representative McCarty was talking about earlier, the CRP program. This is a different program, but we permanently protect agricultural lands. We promote the industry in many, many ways, one of which is our super fun events where we get folks out on farms. One example being our Drink Beer Save Farms event. And we try to educate the public as much as possible through hearings such as this, through our social media. I also have a weekly radio show where I tell positive agricultural stories from across the state. And I've been on air for over 4 years, every week telling another story, another positive agricultural story from across this state. So I encourage everyone to tune into that and just know that there are so many positive stories, positive agriculture stories across this state. Today, though, our focus obviously is House Bill 22 and what can we do to improve access to local food in Alaska? How can we move this ball forward? Next slide. I want to help set the tone for the agriculture industry in Alaska. It's been mentioned a couple of times, but our industry is growing, tremendous growth in Alaska agriculture in the past decade, really. These numbers are based from the agricultural census, which happens on a 5-year rotation. The last one was conducted in 2017. And from 2012 to 2017, the number of farms in Alaska grew by 30%. In the lower 48, they lost 3% of their farms, but we grew by 30%. That's a tremendous growth. We were leading the nation, obviously, in growth in number of farms. Next slide. Obviously, that goes right along this with this, that we were leading the nation in the number of new farms. 46% of Alaskan farmers have less than 10 years of farming experience. We're number one in the nation in new farms. Next slide. And I think this is really important. The number of small farms is up 73% in Alaska. So that's less than 10 acres of production happening. You do not need a lot of space to have a big impact on the Alaska agriculture industry. And when Susie was talking about scaling up, and when other speakers were talking about how this HB 22 changes a specific segment of the industry, but a rising tide floats all boats, right? If we can strengthen our small farmers, they have the ability to scale up to be medium-sized farmers. Our medium-sized farmers can scale up even further. Next slide. Super proud of this one. 47% of our farm operators in Alaska are women. The national average is only 27%. We've got women kind of leading the charge all over and across the state. Last weekend, we had a Women in Agriculture conference with over 300 Alaskan women registered to learn, to network, to share information about, you know, how to expand agriculture in Alaska. Next slide. This one has been mentioned before, but the value of food sold directly to consumers increased from 2.2 million to 4.5 million in that 5-year period. I say this every time I show this slide, and this is homework for all of you, and I would love to address this. What other industry in that 5-year period saw that level of growth? 2.2 million to 4.5 million in a 5-year period. It's not a lot of money. People say, oh, well, Amy, we're just talking about millions. That's nothing, you know, nothing. But it's something, and it's huge for our industry, and it speaks to the tone of what is happening across the state. Tremendous growth. Next slide. So HB 22, as you all know, an act relating to shared animal ownership and relating to the sharing and sale of raw milk and raw milk products. This bill is about access. It's about impacting our agriculture industry. It's about removing barriers. We hear a lot of folks in the administration and at the legislative level talk about how do we make this a less restrictive industry? How do we remove barriers? How do we let the people do what the people want to do, grow the food, eat the food, share the food, et cetera? This is right here, right now. Today's the day you can take action and actually have an impact on removing barriers. Next slide. As I think I've stressed plenty, this is about, it's about access, removing barriers, developing economies, and expanding production, right? I want to address just briefly, Representative McCabe, I really appreciate you trying to establish the safety behind this raw milk situation. And I just want to paint a picture for you real quick. Imagine if tomorrow you went to a local restaurant and you enjoyed the salad bar, and then you got sick. And unfortunately, you know, this happens with regularity. But what we don't see happen is every single salad bar in the state shut down as a result of that one illness. That doesn't happen. And furthermore, the salad bar industry is not shut down for a decade. The last time someone was sick because of raw milk was over a decade ago, and yet we have continued to restrict access to this product for willing Alaskans, folks like me who want these products. You'll hear me say this, well, you won't hear me say this, but people within my friend circle hear me say all the time, cheese is my love language. I eat cheese daily. If you opened my refrigerator, there's more cheese in my refrigerator than any other food type. I have cheese from friends of mine in the lower 48 on the southern Oregon coast that are cheese producers. I have their cheese in my refrigerator, and yet I cannot get Susie Crosby's cheese in my refrigerator. It's a little bit absurd. And this bill could change that. You have an opportunity today and within the next coming weeks to remove a restriction and allow access to products. And as Amy pointed out, we're not shoving this raw milk product down anybody's throat. This is free choice. This is about freedom of access. This is about people being able to get to the products that they want to be able to get to. I'm just scanning my notes and some of the other questions that were asked to make sure there wasn't anything else that I specifically wanted to address. Final slide. I think we're ready for that, Thatcher. I ordered the little button here that's second from the left, I think, on your screen, the little blue Alaska state with the free the cheese. 100 of those will be arriving in my office on Monday, and I'm going to pass 60 of them on down to Representative Garantar. And I sure hope that every single member of the legislature is able to place one of those lapel pins on their jacket and recognize that they want to help free the cheese and get this bill passed, allowing more access to Alaska agricultural products. Next slide. Nothing beats local food. Just a friendly reminder. Next slide. And this is really why we are all here, right? It's about the next generation of agriculturalists who want to produce and share Alaskan food. There's tremendous growth in our industry right now, and the last thing that we want to do is place additional restrictions and barriers on the production and the industry. We want to do everything that we can to safely remove those restrictions. HB 22 will allow for that. It will put the law or the, it'll put the regulation into statute, which is really important for anyone that wants to go into long-term production of agriculture. This is not a cheap industry. It costs money and real investment to get into this, but why would you get into an industry that you're not sure will be around, you know, year to year, because it's only in regulation instead of in statute. Next slide. This is my contact information, and I would willingly answer any questions that I can. I'm super excited to hear from those that are on the line ready to testify, but if anybody's got questions for me, I would happily make an attempt to answer them. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Amy, for your enthusiasm for the free the cheese.
That's right.
Members of the committee.
I have a question.
Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. Love the free the cheese presentation. You mentioned your passion for cheese and the fact that you have many cheeses, and some of which are from out of state. Are other states in a position to where they're able to ship out, for example, Susie's cheese, where they have a local, you know, goat herd, and they produce their own unpasteurized cheese? And do any other states have a system in place where they would be able to ship those out and export those goods?
I do believe that there are some raw milk products that are going over state lines. I do believe that is in existence today.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Well, we are going to close our presenter's testimony and open it up for public testimony. We have a number of farmers online, so I will invite our presenters to stay online and hear from some of their enthusiastic farmers. So with that, we're going to move to public testimony. I'm going to gavel us in for public testimony. I'm going to take them in order that they signed up. So our first is Marlene Wegner in Kenny Lake. Marlene.
Yes, hi. My name is Marlene Wegner. I'm from Kenny Lake. My husband and I have been farming in the Copper River Valley since 1985. We're also involved in the Copper River Valley Farm Bureau. We also run a country store, and I'm proud to say that we carry as many Alaska products as we can. Vanderwills Produce, Habemeister Milk, Delta Barley Products, and local eggs. And I have to say, during this pandemic, we order a lot of things from Costco, and there were times when we had bare shelves from products that we got from Costco, but during that time, our shelves that carried local Alaska products were always full. And I think that is so important, and I think the legislation, everybody needs to support Alaska agriculture as much as possible and do everything we can to make it easy for the farmers. I think there was a question about where the farmers get their feed. Well, we raise our own hay, we buy our grain from Delta, and we support Alaska Mill and Feed. We raise beef and pork, and we sell the meat. We have it butchered at Mount McKinley Meat, and we sell it in our store. And just to reconfirm, you know, we are greatly in support of this, legalizing all raw dairy products, even though I know we can't sell it in our store. You know, we just like to see it made available. So thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Marlene. We do have one question from Representative McCabe.
Marlene, mm-hmm. Through the chair, if you could sell it in your store, would you? Probably a rhetorical.
Yes, I would.
Okay, thank you.
I do have goats, but I don't have herd shares at the moment. I'm pretty busy with the store, so I don't do a lot of milking. But I would do whatever I could, yes, to sell it in my store. I do sell locally grown, you know, farm fresh eggs. And, you know, we do everything we can to support our local farmers.
Right.
Even selling produce in the summertime.
Representative Shragi has a question for you.
Yeah, thank you. So I actually drive through the Kenny Lake area a few times a year, and I would love to stop by your store sometime and check it out. Can I ask what stores you operate?
Okay. We're Wanger's Country Store. We're on mile 10.3 on the Edgerton Highway on the right-hand side.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and please stop by.
All right. Seeing no more questions, Marlene, thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Terry Snyder from Palmer. Go ahead and unmute Terry Snyder.
Good morning.
Good morning, Terry. You sound loud and clear, so identify yourself and go ahead.
Great. My name is Terry Snyder. I'm a resident of Palmer, Alaska, and I'm speaking for myself in support of HB 22. I'm a consumer, not a farmer. And exactly who we need to free the cheese for. I would like to thank Representative Tarr for bringing this important food security bill forward to allow our local farmers the path to offer safe raw milk products to Alaskans. The timing of this bill could not be better, as it recognizes the urgency of removing barriers and giving our farmers the tools to produce increased nutritional needs for our state. If we've learned one thing during these COVID times, it is the importance of a state that's self-sufficient. That should start with local food, and that is truly the way to open Alaska for business. One thing I appreciate about this bill is that it's modeled after successful programs in other states using best practices that will enhance the safety of our own program. I support responsible Alaskan farmers, and I hope that you will too in passage of this bill out of your committee. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Seeing no questions, we'll go on to our next testifier. And I do apologize. I jumped to the conclusion that these were farmers online, and they not. So we've heard from a shopkeep and a consumer, but I do know that some of them are farmers. Sienna Thomas is our next.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm Sienna.
We hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Excellent. I am a farmer by day and a trucker by night, intricately woven into the ag community. We move about $10,000 worth of Delta grains through a co-op, transport co-op, to the Mattsu Valley every month. We also use a lot of these grains ourselves. I have a modest fiber and meat flock of sheep, but I am still a herd share owner. Because although I have occasionally had need to milk out my sheep if they have a single that favors one side of the udder, or if they if I have an orphan that needs milk from another ewe, I have milked my sheep, but they only produce a huge amount 4 to 5 months out of the year if I keep milking them after the lambs wean at about 6 to 8 weeks of age. And so I still keep a herd share for winter milk of with the goat dairy. And as a share owner, I bear the burden of being my own inspector. I heard somebody else talk about would it be beneficial to you if we could sell to the general public? And what that would require is that the government would have to step in as an inspector. And I'm not opposed to that. I just don't want to see it as an option to eliminate herd shares, because the herd share is a community activity where share owners are intricately involved with the farm as a regular consumer, and we get our fluid milk, which normally grade A dairies are what supplies the public with fluid milk. Grade B dairies supply cheesemakers with their milk, and currently, I can trust my herd master to handle my fluid milk and get it to me, and I could take that milk to one of my friends who has more time and experience and knowledge than I do and have that milk made into a value-added product that has all of those beneficial enzymes and live beneficial bacteria that prevent any bad growth. I could have any of my friends turn my fluid milk into a value-added product, except my herd master. My herd master is the only person that I cannot have take what they already have handled and turn it into a value-added product. And it's just, it seems kind of silly to me, because they've been a trusted part of the process, and they also consume their own product, so they are my testing facility. You know, if my herd master gets sick, they're going to let me know. You know, and the thing is, my herd master does not want to get sick, and so in protecting themselves, they protect my share of my milk. And so I would like to see that restriction that is limiting just them from adding value to my product.
Great.
I mean, I can answer any questions you'd like.
I'm looking around to see if anyone has questions for you. And I don't think we do, so thank you for your time, Ms. Thomas. And keep on delivering that Delta barley to Alaska.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Our next testifier is LaRae Smith out of Willow.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Great. Identify yourself and go ahead.
My name is LaRae Smith. I live in Willow, Alaska. I grew up here, moved away for several years, and we just moved back in September, and we bought a property, and we're beginning a farm. So I'm currently a consumer and will be a producer, hopefully soon. I am very much in support of HB 22 and what it would do for our country, for our state, and for our community locally. We were previously in Idaho, and they didn't have laws on raw dairy as strict as here, and it allowed the local farmers to be able to provide for all of us. And so when the pandemic hit, and even in Idaho, where we are connected, we were connected to a bunch of other states, we still had our access to that dairy. And so we had local food from that farmer and several other farmers, and we didn't have a shortage. And then up here, from what I've heard from friends, it was very, very limited and a little bit scary. And I believe that this could really help support small farmers all over the state, which would then support local food sourcing, which I'm a very huge supporter of. And also, I love the idea that a farmer could not just sell raw dairy, but they could also upsell and create other things. Because a lot of us are busy. A lot of people work two jobs, and they don't have time to make their own food, and so then they have to still go to the grocery store and buy food that is from out of state, and this would help support, again, a local food. You know the farmer. You can go visit them, and since that farmer is invested in their own food that they eat themselves, it would help to protect the value and the safety of that food that you would be consuming. Oh, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. And good luck on the next season of growing.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Our next testifier is Melania Savigny, and I'm sure I did not pronounce that correctly. So, if Melania...
Hi.
Go ahead and identify yourself and get started.
Hi, this is Melena Savigny. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi. I moved to Alaska 5 years ago, and I knew I needed to find a source of goat's milk because my son is allergic to cow's milk. He was still a baby at the time, and I needed the milk so that I could still make his formula. I was relieved to be able to become a herd share member so that access to local fresh raw milk that was dependable. I'm able to visit the goat farm at any time to observe not only the extreme care and cleanliness taken while milking, but get to know the goats personally. My kids visit the farm often, and they get to know the goats by name, so much so that when we have our breakfast in the morning, the kids often ask, whose goat milk are we having with our cereal today? As an employee at a shipping company at the Port of Alaska, in Anchorage, I get to see firsthand how quickly our food supply can get cut off. The state of the port's infrastructure is dire. A piling fell into the inlet 2 summers ago, and many of the current pilings are rusting away, and metal brackets act as band-aids to keep the pilings solid. We're at a tipping point. With the recent earthquake, it's a miracle that the port was not damaged. Why am I bringing this up? Because the port is a critical infrastructure, and a majority of our food supply for Alaskans come into this port. Not only is the infrastructure of the port failing,
but we are seeing an increase in late arrivals of ships into the port that bring this food supply due to the stronger winter storms. All it takes is one late sailing by only a few hours to notice that the grocery store shelves are empty from produce and dairy. As we've had other people testify, we've noted during the pandemic that the store shelves were empty. But prior to this pandemic, I personally noted at least four times that the milk shelves were nearly bare in my stores in Wasilla. We need to do anything that we can to increase food security in Alaska, and we owe it to our residents to make it easier for them to make their own choices and offer more local options for their food. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time and for being a herd share consumer. Our next testifier is Arthur Griswold, Golden Heart Dairy out of Delta Junction.
Hello. This is Art Griswold, Delta Junction, and we are a farmer. We produce, we have 60 acres.
Arthur, we're kind of, you're cutting in and out. So we had a real strong introduction that you are a farmer. So if that, if you were positioned in a place when you opened, could you move back to that location? Let's see if we can hear you consistently.
I haven't. Am I better now?
You are?
Is it better now?
It is. Go ahead.
Okay. I got to stand right by the window. Okay. We are farmers, and we run a Jersey dairy. We run 30 head right now. We produce to over 60 customers that are our regular customers, our herd share customers. And we have a situation where we charge for our herd share membership besides the product, and we still have that kind of volume. We are growing faster than we can produce milk right now for the customers, and we want to see this thing get straightened out so we don't have to have these contracts with our customers to protect ourselves. The only way we can do a herd share is have a contract with the customer, and John Doe walks up and wants to try my milk and buy it. I can't sell it to him until he has a herd share membership, and this is a tie-up. We need to actually go back to the old way milk was distributed in Alaska, and I've been here since 1954. So I've seen the dairies come and go, and I've seen milk from outside take over our milk and bring in this ultra-pasteurized milk that actually is dead milk. Our milk is still alive and healthy. So that's my whole statement. I'm a peddler. I want my milk sold, and I want no problems with the government saying I can't sell it. The next thing is I want to tell everybody that your herd share milk usually is cleaner than the milk you get from the retailer outside. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Griswold, earlier we had a question from one of the members of the committee about your ability to find feed for your farm locally, and since you're in Delta, could you describe for us your ability to either buy locally the feed or your ability to produce feed for your own herd?
Yes, 100% of our comes from Alaska. The only thing we buy is salt, added to the product of the feed. We buy local grains, we buy local hay. You produce a local and also buy more than we produce because we don't have enough acreage.
Great.
There's a real potential, and I'm 87 years old, actually. My two sons who run the dairy, one is 37, the other one is 31. And this is a family project. My wife runs a greenhouse business called Grandma's Greenhouse. As much for young people in Alaska to get into agriculture. But the handicap is all the time.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. Our next testifier is Ashley Ebenall out of Fairbanks.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can. Loud and clear. Go ahead.
So my name is Ashley Ebenall, and I'm the owner of Little Patch of Heaven Farm. We are located just north of Fairbanks in Fox. We offer a wide variety of legal products, from our eggs to our whole butchered chickens to our pork boxes and fresh vegetables, and of course our goat milk shares. We own a wonderful small herd of dairy goats, all clean tested, and we use their milk regularly for our family. I know there's a small risk allowing the raw milk sales and products, but there's also a risk allowing the sales of vegetables and products that fall under the cottage food laws of Alaska. Yet the state still allows for lettuce, et cetera, to be sold directly from farmer to consumer, knowing that the farmer knows to wash the lettuce and handle it with clean hands, along with the customer knowing the risk that comes with buying lettuce and that they should wash and handle it correctly to reduce the risk of bacteria and foodborne illnesses. This comparison shows how the government lets people choose to purchase it or not, with both parties knowing the risks involved. This is not a matter on whether we think it's safe. It's a matter of if the government should be able to decide for us. And I, along with many of my customers who want to purchase milk/dairy products, believe we should have the right to decide for ourselves that they would like to purchase raw milk and the products, and we would like to legally be able to do so continuingly through our herd shares. I ask that you look at it from a farmer's shoes. We work tirelessly to provide fresh, healthy choices for Alaskans, and all we want to do is be able to do it legally and safely. I know Alaskans make educated decisions and how much Alaskans love their freedom, so please give the people the choice to decide for themselves. I'd also like to add, I use almost all local feed for all my livestock, and as far as my goats, it's all local except for their medicine slash vaccinations. My hay comes from Delta, from a farmer we have a great relationship with. There are also a lot of other local hay producers and also producers of chicken feed, goat feed, hog feed, and cattle feed, et cetera, all out of Delta and some from Wasilla Palmer. Alaska has huge amounts of property set up for farming. A lot of farms that we see for sale are because it's hard for farmers to get their products to customers legally. HB 22 allows us to offer some of those products legally. It encourages us to buy that farmland and to invest into it and to scale up our operations. Again, thank you for letting us have this conversation.
Thank you, Ms. Ebenall. Any members of the committee have questions? All right, thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. Our next testifier is Tara Lucas from Kuprinoff City.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I was just looking at the Weston A. Price Foundation website last night. Actually, email I got.
So, Tara, you need to state your name for the record. It's one of our weird protocols.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, hi. My name is Tara Ann Lucas, and I live on Kuprinoff City. And the Weston A. Price Foundation just sent me an email that this was happening. So I'm not really prepared, except for my heart and mind know a little bit about this. We have my husband's family lived at Point Agassiz, which is across from Petersburg, and they had a dairy. They sold cottage cheese and milk. They actually rode across Frederick Sound to bring everything to Petersburg. They didn't have a boat to zip across in 30 minutes. They actually rode and waited for weather and all that kind of stuff. And they had a successful business going until there started being too many requirements, like having to have pavement and all kinds of requirements that they couldn't meet over there. And so they never even went back. They just had to shut it all down. And we've had, which was too bad for the community and for them, that was their whole livelihood. But then my family, two, three generations later, my husband and I, we've had goats, and we didn't sell any milk, but we enjoyed health benefits of it, and I feel like I could subsist off of that milk. It is that raw milk. It is so good. And we had friends come and help me cage them in stuff when the goats were getting away, and And she said, her husband and my husband are both really lean guys, and she said, this milk is the only way my husband ever gained any weight. It's just really healthy, and I would sure love to be able to buy some from somebody that's willing to put in that kind of effort that we've been hearing about. And I feel like a lot of things are over-regulated here in America. I think it's just turning more and more that way. And my other concern is I was just listening to something, listening to a lot of things lately, but a Jewish woman was saying that, did you know how Hitler got us hating the Jews? And she said it was, he made us afraid of them like they had germs. And it feels like a lot of things are that way, like everybody's over scared about germs. And I could definitely look at a place and tell whether I'd want to drink their milk or not on my own. I don't need someone to regulate it. And I would like that available. And I remember going to Canada years ago, and I could just buy it right in the store in a bottle. I thought that was pretty neat. Yeah, thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas. All right. Our next testifier is Gina Johnson in Kodiak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Gina Johnson. I'm calling from Kodiak, and I would like to ask you to look at House Bill 22 and pass it. It would be, it's so important. We're so isolated, more so here in Kodiak. We're not on the road system. We're able to buy goat milk here locally, but it's pasteurized. Raw milk is so much more nutritious. It's not been cooked. You have a lot of health benefits from raw goat milk. It's only one molecule different than human milk. When a mother nurses her baby, that milk isn't pasteurized. And so how come we have to drink pasteurized milk from the store? It's just a good product and very healthy for you. And if people don't understand it, they need to research a little bit more, and so they can grasp that. And then having a local product, we're not having to import it. It's going to be that much more nutritious for us. And the money's going to stay within the state instead of paying somebody from out of state for their product that's been shipped, and we don't know how old it is or how much nutrition is left in it by the time we consume it. So I would appreciate a yes vote on House Bill 22. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Now I'm going to just go back. We did have River Bean on earlier, then he became unavailable, and I'm going to double check. He's still not available. And that looks to have concluded our public testimony. So I'm going to gavel out of public testimony. I did mention to the committee earlier, we have both Dr. Robert Gerlich, who's the state veterinarian online from DEC, to address any questions we have, and Christina Carpenter with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation if we had any agency questions or discussion. Representative McCarty.
Yes, through the chair, is Dr. Gerlich available?
Dr. Gerlich, we're lighting you up, taking you off mute.
Yes, this is Robert Gerlich. I'm the state veterinarian for Alaska. Work out of DEC Environmental Health.
Thank you. Representative McCarty.
So, Dr. Gerlich, with this HB 22 passing, does it cause any more challenges from your department in overseeing these type of programs?
We have no regulations regarding herd shares. The state had required herd share operators to have a contract with their share owners, and that was specifically part of that was to go ahead and provide that contact so that the consumer would know the producer and go to the farm to go ahead and evaluate that to get their product. But we do not have any regulations over herd share operations.
Just to follow up?
Follow up, go ahead.
So confirming that this doesn't put more imposition onto your department in managing these type of things. Is that correct?
that does not put any increased work involved with our department, other than would be with working with public health if there were an outbreak, to follow up on the outbreak investigations.
Thank you, and thank you for all your work.
Thank you, and I would draw the members' attention that there is a zero fiscal note for the bill, that agencies were required to evaluate the bill to see if there is any impact of workload, which would result in a fiscal note, and it is zero. Dr. Gerlach, we have another question for you from Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Dr. Gerlach, through the chair, I'm interested to know, what if there was an amendment to this bill that allowed direct sale without a contract and without a herd share from a milk-producing farm, whether they have goats or cattle? Would your department be impacted? What kind of inspections of that would you envision? And would that have an increased fiscal note, I guess, is what I'm asking. How much, if we amended this or if somebody amended it, to provide for a section, say, that if a producer wanted to, they could not do the herd share and just sell milk directly to the public, would that change your answer to Rep. McCarty's question just now?
This is Dr. Gerlach through the chair. That would potentially impact our operation. It would depend on the regulations associated with the sale and distribution of raw milk. Currently, we allow the sale and distribution of grade A milk, which provides a background regulations for safety of the product that's being produced and sold, safety of the containers that product is being sold in or distributed in. It also addresses the handling and the processing of that product as it goes through the commercial chain to the consumer. And the last thing it does is address actually animal health. So it addresses the fact that these animals are free from infectious contagious disease. So grade A operations are pretty thorough with respect to their oversight on the safety and safe production of that product. And so that would all depend then if the raw milk product was going to be under a regulated process like that, such as it is in Washington State, then that would have an impact on our facility and our office.
Thank you.
All right. I see no other committee members trying to grill you right now, Dr. Gerlach. So it is the intention of the chair to put this bill aside and take it up a week from today, next Tuesday, and we'd give it an amendment deadline then of Monday, the 5th of April. Do we have other discussion from the committee about the bill? Representative Tarr, would you like to make any closing comments to the committee about your bill and the enthusiastic support that we hear across the state for it?
Just to say thank you so much for the bill hearing this morning. And I guess one takeaway, I was really excited through the public testimony, really across the state interest in this. So that was exciting. Thank you.
All right. So like I said, it is our intention, myself and Co-Chair Shragi, to put the bill aside today and take it up next Tuesday with an amendment deadline of Monday the 5th. We will be meeting this Thursday at 8 a.m. That's Thursday, April 1st, not a joke. And we will be hearing the two governor's appointees to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, as well as hearing an introduction to H.J.R. 14, a resolution supporting the passage of the Safe Banking Act. Seeing no questions or comments for the committee, we are going to adjourn at, I should have said the time, 9:36, and then adjourn.